But first, we have our last speaker, Laurent Ledoux. The floor is yours, Laurent.
Thank you. Thank you very much for hosting me here. It was a tough question, Yohanan, when you asked me to speak about, first of all, how can business serve peace? And secondly, what is my own commitment to peace? So I do not pretend to answer fully this question, especially the first one, how can business serve peace? There are many books and articles written about this, and I'm not an expert. But I just would like to mention something which seems to me quite important. So I have just one proposition. It's a very simple one. Business should become more rigorous about the way it uses its words. It's very simple, but it is so important, the way we name things. And I think yesterday, Iris van der Weken said Caroline van der Weken mentioned that, no, am I right? Yeah. Caroline van mentioned that that indeed the way business talks about itself is mainly in terms of war, competition, etc. And it induces a certain culture within companies and even within society. And in fact, why do I propose this? Because I remember that when I was studying and at Leuven, and I had Luc Boucart as my teacher, I was very lucky. I had also a professor named Karel Bach, who was a professor of sociology. And he told us about Adorno, who said, lack of rigor in the use of words leads unavoidably to fascism. It's a very strong sentence, but I think we can see it a lot today. Adorno wrote a lot about mass culture, culture industry, and indeed how this shape our vision of the world. And this culture industry and this mass culture, well, leads to mass individuals who are, in the words of Adorno, politically lazy or apathetic, and even intellectually lazy. And this again facilitates probably the emergence of some forms of fascism. Just to give you an example of what we see today is this. Well, babies are not born yet this way, but it seems that the words that children of 3 years know most are brands, Coca-Cola, Sony, and so on. I mean, this world with children knowing more those words than liberty, solidarity, spirituality, is probably, once again, a world in which fascism or all kinds of authoritarianism can grow more easily, and so lead to violent societies. Because we know that those guys were really expert in manipulating masses, in making propaganda, and basically in industrializing some sort of culture that led to the horrors that we know. But in fact, this leads to this very simple but at the same time complex idea that violence is in fact a system, an autopoietic system, which breeds itself, and which is fed by the psychic system, the organic or body system, the cultural system, the health system, political, legal, and economic system. And all those are connected and influencing each other. So once again, the way the economic system names itself, the words it uses, breed violence indirectly. So, and I think, again, also Herman Van Rompuy mentioned yesterday that business can inspire confidence. Yes, it does, but provided it uses a different taxonomy. And one of my friends, Andres Ginested, who is studying the autopoietic system of violence, says there are seven concepts for peace building. Reducing trauma, designing epigenetics, enhancing empathy, being generous, being creative, living in solidarity, steering complexity. Of course, it's I won't go into the details, but we understand when we see this that business is very far away from those seven concepts. We should make business more conscious about the need to work on those concepts. So that peace, because peace needs to be established as a daily routine and a norm in language and in day-to-day attitudes, including in business. So now to answer your second question, Johanan, how do I personally try to engage in peace? Well, I didn't know I was, but when I reflect about what I've been doing with philosophy and management, the association I have the pleasure to lead, it's a small organization where we try to organize philosophical seminars for managers. Well, basically for the 14 last years, we have been trying, with the help of philosophers, to make managers reflect upon the words and concepts they use in management. And just to show you what it may mean, I would like to give very two simple examples. One is about leadership. Leadership, well, if you look at business articles, management articles, there are all kinds of articles about leadership. But the way they describe leadership, to me, is totally wrong most of the time. Basically, they describe leadership as, you know, the capacity to solve the problems of your group. And I think this is plainly wrong. And it induces the wrong culture. While, in fact, we have other people like Ronald Heifetz, who claims a totally different view of leadership. He says, for example, that leadership is mobilizing the group for the adaptive work. And why is it so different? Because for Heifetz, it is not the leader's task to solve the problem. His task is to mobilize the group to solve its problems. It is the group who needs to solve the problem, not the leader. The leader is there to mobilize the group. And, you know, he says then the leader's task is to modulate the stress of the group. And this refers again to what Herman Van Rompuy was saying yesterday, when he says that leaders need to give confidence. Well, the leader needs to modulate the stress, because when we are in stress situation, the group, the people, avoid the productive work, avoid the adaptive work they need to do in order to change the situation, to change the vision that they have of the situation. And Heifetz gives an intriguing, to me, representation of this. He says basically when there is a problem, the stress level rises. There is a disequilibrium. And when there is too much stress, people start to panic, they start to shout at each other, they get away, they make as if there is, would be no problem. Basically, they find all kinds of ways of avoiding the work they need to do. Of course, if there is no stress, people don't do much either. So basically, one of the leader's tasks is to modulate the stress so that the stress stays within a productive range of stress, so that people start to really address their issues. And this links to me to Hitler again, or even Stalin, or those fake leaders, in the words of Heifetz. They are not real leaders. Because take, for example, Hitler. What did he do? He claimed that there was a simple solution to the enormous problems Germany was facing at the time. And his solution was, for example, to get rid of some people. But this prevented the German people to address the real issue that they had to face. So basically, what Hitler did in Heifetz's model was to reduce the stress level by claiming there was a simple solution. And through this, the German people, at least for 5 to 10 years, avoided the real problem they had to face. And not only the Germans, but also other people. So basically, at Philosophy and Management, through those seminars, we try to reflect differently upon those words and concepts. Another example is, and I think it will be close to what Cameron was saying, but also Laszlo, it is to move away from the current ideology, the Chicago School ideology, which claims that it is obvious that the only purpose of a company and responsibility of managers should be to maximize profits under the constraints of the respect of the law. This is an ideology. It is no more than this. It is a belief. It is not reality. It is not natural. There are many enterprises which function differently. But part of the problem, part of the reason this is so important today and believed by so many people, it is also because we confuse completely corporations and enterprises. Those are not the same things. I won't go into the detail. But when we start to disentangle them, then we understand we should go beyond, as Laszlo was saying, and go and put Friedman in his head, on its head, and say, okay, the goal of a company should be to optimize the value for the whole society under the constraint of an adequate return for shareholders. That is, the objectives become the constraint, and the constraint become the objective. That's what we are trying to do. And lastly, just to give you an idea of what a different language for companies could be for business, it could go like this, and I borrowed this from one of my friend, Mark Strom, with whom I presented a paper a few years ago for SPES. He says we need to move to ask grounded questions. And these are some examples of the abstract question that we ask in business. For example, what's our model of leadership? Mark proposes to say, what does it mean for each of us to be wise here? As an alternative question. What's our strategy could become, what new story do we want? What's our culture? What are the founding stories that made us who we are? What culture do we need? Which is very abstract. Of whom are we proud? What are our values? What fuels our pride? What kills it? Thank you very much.